Hello and welcome to the Green Room Golf Course podcast from the British and International Golf Greenkeepers Association. Thanks for listening to this podcast, which sheds a light upon the golf industry and what it takes to maintain a modern course. I hope you enjoy the show.
Welcome to the Green Room podcast live stage. My name is Curtis Tyrell. I'm the director of agronomy at Desert Highlands Golf Club in Scottsdale, Arizona, and host of the Course Reports podcast. And today we are welcomed here on the live stage with John Coleman from MTD Specialty Turf Products and Craig Cameron of Trevisto Plant Solutions.
Correct.
Thanks, guys, for taking time out of your schedule to join us up here. Well, why don't we just take a couple minutes and just tell our listeners a little bit about yourself, where you're from, and how you ended up getting into what you're doing now. And we'll start with you, John.
Yeah, sure. So I started many moons ago at a small golf course in Scotland, about 20 miles north of Glasgow, called Dumbarton. Served a very basic apprenticeship. Done that, then went on to full-time education. I done sports turf and golf course management. Spent there 3 years, had a year at Royal Mid Surrey intern student. That was very good grounding, you know, enjoyed that. From there I moved to Aberdale Golf Club in Sheffield, so kind of moving all the way south and then starting to come back up a bit. Done that for the best part of 10 years. Through that tenure at Aberdale, I was the Greenkeeper of the Year in 1998-99. In 2000, I set up my own advisory business called Coleman Consulting and worked quite a lot with golf course construction, in particular with Robert Trent Jones. So I worked on behalf of the client, so looked after the contract. I've done some expert witness work and various things. And my family's been in engineering, so how I got into this side of the business, which is equipment, so both mechanical and electrical and electronic and guidance. Is we've got an engineering business, so I set up my own business in 2006 and find myself here today. I built a business from nothing really, and I sold it late 2016 to a big American company called MTD, and I now work for them and run the UK and European division of their golf and sports stuff section. So that's how I find myself here. So none of it planned whatsoever.
None of it planned. It's kind of the way it goes, I think, for all of us.
So that's a whistle stop tour.
Yeah, all right. How about you, Craig?
I'll try and do the whistle stop tour. And right. I've probably got the weirdest CV in greenkeeping, I'm pretty certain. I started off as an apprentice shipwright in Rosyth Navy, or repairing ships for the Royal Navy for 4 years. Didn't enjoy it. Was doing amateur theatre at the same time, ended up leaving, became a professional performer, worked in professional theatre for 13 years, probably the only greenkeeper that's been in the West End.
Wow.
Ended up moving out to Germany, met my wife there. I was between jobs. I'd sort of on and off played golf all the time. Because I was between jobs, I was playing golf a lot, sort of almost every day, watching the little guys running around in the mowers, which kind of intrigued my engineer's brain. I was speaking to the pro one day and said, you know, could I volunteer just to work with these guys just for something to do? And really enjoyed it. I met the agronomist when he came up to visit, ended up going for an agronomy visit with him, visited 12 clubs in 5 days or something. And he said, you've got a really good brain for this. You could really do something in greenkeeping, but you need education. So I went, okay, I'll look into it. I ended up at Elmwood College in Scotland, which is where I'm from originally. Did my NC. The idea was I'd go back to that golf club and work as a greenkeeper, but then I got the opportunity to work at Glen Eagles. So I did a season at Glen Eagles. By then, I was going to stay at Glen Eagles. I was offered a full-time position, but my wife got an amazing contract in 42nd Street in Germany. I'd now been separated from my wife for a year. So I said, no, I'm going to go back to Germany. So I started looking for a job. And got a job at a local place and then ended up as head greenkeeper after another 6 months. So I was sort of 2.5 years into greenkeeping by this time, and all of a sudden I'm in charge of 27 holes.
Yeah,
I was there for 2.5 years. And then the job came up at Elmwood for a deputy and greenkeeper instructor. So I moved back to Scotland. So I was happy as Larry. training greenkeepers every day, doing construction, sort of rebuilding greens, tees, bunkers, everything. So great education for me. Started my HNC whilst I was there, and then my son was born. And my wife suddenly decided, I don't like Scotland anymore. It's always raining and grey here. And then a job came up in England where she's from, so I moved down there. Very environmentally friendly, won the Environmental Golf Course of the Year last year at Aldeburgh. I was there for 6 years, worked with Mark Broughton, Master Greenskeeper, so great education for me again. From there, I started looking for my first big post, and then I got a big break to go to European Tour destination at St Leon Road 2 weeks before the Solheim Cup. So I was there during the Solheim Cup prep, and then I was in charge. Was basically there 3.5 years. During that whole sort of transition from Aldeburgh to St Leon, I started using drones for photography and videoing, and then obviously I got into video blogging. It's a great way of showing off your golf course from a different aspect. And then after 3.5 years at St Leon, there was a job advert that came up, and someone wrote to me and said, this company's looking for someone with good greenkeeping experience and drone experience, and they said, I think it's for you. So I applied, got the job, and that's kind of where I'm at now. I'm with Trivista Plant Solutions, and we use drones and multispectral cameras to monitor plant health from the air. And the reason I'm in this section is because we've made the process completely automated. Most people look at a drone and think, oh, I'll never be able to fly that.
Right.
But they don't. We teach them how to land it in an emergency because they have to be able to do that. But in reality, they choose their mission, touch the button, the drone takes off and does the rest for them. And even the process of processing the images goes through our system. My parent company is an IT company, so they've programmed a program where you take the SD card out of the drone, stick it in the computer, and the processing's all done for you. 2 hours later, you have your high-definition images of all greens. So
they've
basically got a normal HD photograph and an NDVI photograph, so they can see the plant health. They can see where the stress is.
Yeah. So, I mean, technology, that's what we're here talking about, you know, the future of tools in our industry. And, you know, earlier with a couple of guys, we asked, you know, what's the most important thing you're using? And they said a moisture meter, and you know, years ago it was just a good old soil probe, but now we have moisture meters. And so the idea of drones and robotic greens mowers and such being a part of our world in the very near future, or even today in some cases, is obviously at hand. So back to what you were just describing. So if I'm a golf course manager and you come to see me, what is it that you're trying to get me to look into? I mean, obviously there's a hardware, a drone, but what's the other piece to it?
Our end game for the course manager is to be able to pinpoint exactly where stress is. I mean, I've been down the route, I've done the measuring, I've had the moisture probe out, I've gone for performance measuring, reducing fertilizer inputs, reducing water, reducing fungicide, and I managed to do that at a European Tour golf club. To the extent where I saved them lots of money and diverted that to other things that needed fixing. But had I had the NDVI camera, had I known about that then, it could have sped up that process because I could have really targeted my weak spots, my hot spots on the greens. If I was reducing stress in the summer by targeted hot hand watering, I wouldn't have the stress, which would then lead into the disease in the winter. So that's how it would have helped me. And that's what we want to do for greenkeepers now, is be able to help them make a fertilizer plan, fertilize, and then monitor how long does that last until I need to fertilize again. Not I'm just going to do it every 4 weeks because that's what I've always done. We want them to monitor it with the turf health and say, well, yes, I need to fertilize now, but I don't need to do all my greens. Six of them are still all right, so I'll do 12. So I'll save 30% on that application of fertilizer. And what we're aiming for is maybe a 10-20% reduction in fertilizer by the end of the year, and targeted watering so we actually get the right grass species as well. Because another thing that I did at St. Leon was change from 90% Poano greens to over 80% creeping bent grass greens in 3 years.
Right.
And that reduced my disease to zero, basically. So.
Sure.
And two applications of fertilizer, fungicide instead of eight.
I hear you. So you, when you come in and your drone, which is make it as user-friendly as possible, right? We don't have to be the pilots.
No. Well, technically you have to be able to fly it, so we'll do a sort of tour training session with you, but you're only there to monitor the drone and in an emergency land it. So if an emergency helicopter comes along, they will fly lower than is allowed for normal aircraft, so you have to get out of the way. So we'll tell them how to land it in an emergency, but in reality they're just tracking it.
So do you need a license now?
We use drones that are light, they're under 2 kilos, so all you need is a flameproof tag on it that says who owns it and insurance for 1 million euros, liability insurance. And that's it for under 2 kilos at the moment. I've done my full drone pilot's license in German just for giggles.
Just to make it a little bit more difficult.
Just to make it a little bit more of a chat. I failed it the first time, but I passed it the second time after studying every day for a month. Yeah. It's basically the same. If you do a full drone pilot's license, it's the same test as a pilot. It's the same theory test as a pilot.
Wow.
So it's quite intense, and you have to get 75% pass rate, and I've just scraped through the second.
Sure.
But I've got that for 5 years. I don't have to do it again.
Okay.
But for air green keepers, they literally just need to know how to land it.
Okay.
And be able to work an iPad. So, and most people can do that. So.
All right, so it's relatively easy as the user to handle the drone.
Yeah.
And it goes up and you fly it how often? And it's what's it
they often ask, how often should I do this? And we say, well, I would recommend once a week. But I mean, if they want to do it 2 times a week, 5 days a week, it's up to them really, because we give them the drone. Other companies will fly for you, they'll send a pilot to you, which, you know, that brings the cost up because someone's got to come to you and they can't come often enough. I actually had a company approach me when I was superintendent and flew for me, and my first question was, well, how often can you do it? And they went, well, I'll come once a month. I said, it's not enough, my course changes from day to day sometimes in the summer, I need it all the time. We can't deliver that, so that's why our business model is to use a drone light enough where they don't need all the qualifications, and we do the programming. It's my job to program their flight missions so they can see the drone at all times, and it is automatic. I can do 30 greens in under an hour. I don't think you could drive around 30 greens in under an hour.
Right.
And basically, our IT company, our parent company, worked with our software program. Initially, it was taking 12 hours to process the photographs because there's a lot of them, and they got that down to 2 hours. And I said, well, that fits perfectly with our business model, because traditionally hand watering is an afternoon job. So if you can, it's superintendent or one of your minions flies in the morning, 2 hours later the photographs are there, you can give that to them either on their phone or in hard copy and say, right, go to these greens and hit all these yellow spots. And as course manager, I can fly again 2 days later, check, did they hit all the right spots and has it helped? Because that's the main thing. Mm-hmm. We do things in greenkeeping, and it's very much, you know, I hope that worked. You know, you apply fungicide and say, well, I hope that worked. I'll spray it again in 2 weeks just in case. And it's all cost, more and more chemicals. And what we're trying to say is, let's minimize everything. Let's not fertilize too much. Let's use the bare amount of water and let's reduce our fungicide input, because it's good for the environment. And apparently that's the buzzword at the moment.
Yeah, fantastic. And so is there a program where you continue to support the customer through evaluation of the information?
Yeah, that's the other side of my job, is consultant. So I will come once a month, go through the data with them, check that they have any issues. They can phone us every day. The program, our computer needs to be at their office. It needs to be online. So, and the reason for that is if they can phone us at any time and our programmer can jump straight into their program, fix it for them, or updates, because right now, because we're in research and development, we can just drop an update in without having to say, oh, can you please install this update? So it's properly hands-off for the greenkeeper. All they need to do is open it and look at their photographs, look at their images.
Fantastic. So really neat stuff with the drones. John, what are you up to with Club Cadet and the robotic greens mowers and such?
Yeah, so Club Cadet, or MTD, who's a parent company, they acquired a company called Precise Path Robotics about 7 years ago, I believe.
Okay.
The original robotic greens mower is called RG3, and it worked on a local positioning system. So that was 4 beacons around the green. And you would send out an ultrasonic signal and a radar, and it would triangulate its position and cut the green. So there's some setup involved. But it was very much a prototype product. It was very niche. So a couple of years ago, MTD decided they'd like to take it further, about 3 years ago. And also thought that we'd like to get more into golf, so they acquired my business, to cut a long story short. And with my background being agronomic based, and the fact obviously I retrained as a mechanical engineer as well, was a good fit for them. We had made the cutting units, which we would call the business end, so we had a good reputation for that. They didn't have their own cutting unit. And then we decided, let's take this a stage further and let's do it properly and commercialise the product properly. So we went to GPS. So GPS through RTK. So trying to get the same accuracy that you can get with the local positioning system but through GPS. And the stage we find ourselves at the moment, we're due to launch this springtime. It's been a challenge to do it. You know, a satellite sits 30 kilometres in the air. You know, we're trying to get 1 to 2 centimetres accuracy. So we use RTK, you need the cellular network for it. And we've got golf greens, which are generally the most difficult thing to do, you know, is golf greens. So GPS works through trilateration rather than triangulation. So it's measuring time signals. And for order to do it, so if you take an autonomous mower for fairways, for instance, or a vehicle, it's quite good. You get to the end of your fairway and you can cut in a big light bulb fashion, and it's quite easy for the satellites to track it. In the minimum of 4 satellites, we generally lose 7. But on a golf green, if you think about it, you're cutting a golf green and you get to the end of your cut path, the cutting head picks up and it has to turn at the end. It's very difficult for it to know where it is in the world because it's pivoting in such a short
right,
distance.
Right.
So you have to overcome that, which we've managed to do. So from a GPS perspective, where we're at the moment, we're very good. It's working very well. Interestingly, the biggest problem we're facing is agronomic based. So we just recently, we were cutting on some creeping bent greens in Los Angeles, and there's some grain issues. So grain problems caused by some slopes and some runoff. So whilst we can manipulate RGX, it's called, a robotic mower, and we can send it in a straight path within 1 or 2 centimetres, the grain was actually pulling the machine and causing it to deviate. And that sounds
like a serious grain.
Yeah, and that's, if you're doing that with a walk mower, you get a feedback loop through your arms and you can interpret it and you can push against it.
Right.
Do it. That's more difficult to do, obviously, robotically, because by the time the machine has actually experienced that and got the feedback loop, it's almost too late. So anybody that tells you really that GPS is ready for golf at the moment, it's not really, you know, it's not there. We are certainly not too proud, so we understand we've got some challenges. We're 95% there, but that last 5%, as it is often in many, many cases, is the most difficult to do, but we're very close. And it's moving forward at pace.
How have you found greenkeepers in terms of their reception to this kind of new technology when you talk with them about what's...
So if you were to ask me maybe 10 or 15 years ago, same question, I think greenkeepers would have been kind of very reticent, putting it politely. Now it's slightly different. I done a voice of the customer through the US last year for 10 days. We visited golf courses high-end, golf courses low-end, in between. We visited baseball fields, we visited soccer clubs, MLS, we visited gridiron football, lots of places. And the questionnaire ranged in a multitude of different topics. So it could be, do you manage your organic matter? How do you set up your cutting units? What's your water policy? Various things. One of them was labour. That was one of the questions. And we got a vast range of answers for their various different things. But the one consistent thing was, bar none, was labour shortage, was a difficulty. So I think 10 or 15 years ago,
that's surprising, yeah.
I think people would have been a little bit concerned. You'd certainly have got your early adopters. Every single person, bar none, were basically saying we need this now, which I found quite interesting myself. I've mixed emotions with it because, you know, both Craig and myself, you know, getting into greenkeeping yourself because you enjoyed it, you know, and you need job satisfaction. You know, I do question whether the job satisfaction is still there if we automate everything, but I think ultimately that's the way it's going.
Yeah.
From an environmental perspective as well, you were talking earlier, you know, golf has had a bad rap. over the years, unjustifiably so when you can compare it against ag. But certainly robotics, you know, lithium power, I think, you know, clean energy is the way to go as well. And we're certainly, as a company, involved in that as well. So,
right.
Yeah, so it's been somewhat of an eye-opener.
Yeah. Yeah, Craig, how about you? I mean,
the main hesitancy is from older people. I mean, I have no problem with the PlayStation kids, as I call them, because they look at it and go, great, this is a toy. And I go, it's not a toy. Please don't use it as a toy. We've had three crashes, and all of them have been pilot error, you know, because I'll say to the guys, you know, you need to get a feel for it. You need to find a big field and practice with it. So they'll go and practice with it, and then eventually they'll crash into a tree or something. So, and I've had one guy who flew it to the battery, was almost dead, and it was automatically landed and landed in a tree and then fell 40 feet. It's probably the worst disaster for a drone I've ever seen. It smashed the arm. I've never seen anything so broken. So we try and tell them, like, just fly the missions that we set. It's my job to go in there and set them up for you so you won't crash into a tree. Right. So please follow our program. If you want to use it privately, then buy it. You know, go buy your own one, but don't do it with our drone. And the older guys just look at it with terror and just go, oh, I've got to fly this. It's like, no, it's not. It's really simple. And that was kind of our end game, was making it, I wouldn't say idiot-proof, I would just say making it, you know, age-proof, so people just don't think, oh, this is new technology, I'll never be able to work it, I can't even get the remote on the telly to work properly. So, but it is properly simple, even to the point where the program we use for the missions is their golf course. It's only got their three missions. Right. You know, they look at my screen when I'm showing it to them, and I've got every golf course I work with. There's like about 20 at the moment. So, you know, and I'm sort of scrolling through trying to find their mission. I said, no, you'll have three. So, and if you choose the wrong one, it won't take off because it knows it's too far away from its takeoff point. So don't panic about it. So they're like, okay. And once they get over that initial fear, they're actually fine with it. I mean, the guys who have been using it are absolutely, oh, this is great. It takes no time at all, and we're enjoying it. But right now we have three golf clubs testing it. We have three football clubs testing it. We've got two more golf clubs coming in the spring. And now we're in the sort of proof of concept is using the information to save fertilizer, to save water. And if once we've done that, then I think it really will, pardon the pun, take off.
Yeah, take off for sure. The labor savings thing. I think the drones too. I mean, ultimately the information you're pulling out of this and advising people with will make their labor more efficient, right?
Yeah, our end game is to save time. Yeah. I mean, everybody traditionally goes out and fertilizes 18 greens. We want them to say, no, I'm going to fertilize 12 because that's all it needs. Or it might be three.
Sure.
When I'm hand watering, I'm not going to go on there and then have to measure on every green. They can do that if they wish, but we want to say, well, here's a photograph and it's the back right. So park your vehicle by the back right, get your hose out, water that bit, put it back in, go to the next green. So again, they might shave off a couple of hours hand watering. And if you're at a club that does hand watering daily, then that's a lot of time you're going to save in 1 week. And you know you're being really methodical about it and only hitting the areas you want. One of the things that really helped me change the grass species over was controlling moisture. We wanted 20% all over the green and nothing more. Whereas if you send someone a bit inexperienced to hand water, they'll hit everything. So now the bit that was dry and was maybe 12% is fine, but the rest is at 37% because they've overwatered it. And that's just as bad as underwatering.
Yeah, right.
So yeah, it's time saving we want to go for.
Yeah, you know, I think that it's tough as a greenkeeper to give up the control that you have, traditional control that you have with the mechanisms and the tools that we have to hand it over to something like you guys are talking about. That's the real challenge. But, you know, where do you see the next 12 months for the things that you're working on? I mean, obviously you laid out what your goals are, but is there anything specific that you hope to accomplish or places you want to be with your product in the next 12 months or maybe longer?
So we've already got pre-orders for RGX. Really for us, the previous iteration of the product was niche. It wasn't perfect. Certain situations you couldn't use it. For us, our customer-facing spec really is centred around it has to be able to work everywhere. So it's not really a specific place that we want to go. We want to be able to work effectively in every place. That's what we would like. That would be success for us. So if that, you know, that superintendent does have grainy greens, or he's got some shade cover, or he's got some slopes around his greens, we're trying to take into account all of that so that they're not limiting what they can use. We have, with the old machine, had instances where it's effective on 17 greens, but when we do our survey, there's one green. And you don't want to have to go into a place and say you're going to have to remodel this because the slope's too great for turning. So,
sure.
So that's been a challenge. So for us, it's more, can we satisfy the customer-facing spec? If we can do that, frankly, the rest of it should take care of itself.
Is there any plans to expand this into other areas of the golf course with fairway mowing or anything else?
Yeah, so we've got a prototype just now for sports turf. So we can go into sports turf. Interestingly, the biggest, so you can go into fairways, is not too difficult. One of the biggest problems for sports turf is emptying the grass bag. So we can accommodate GPS, RTK. Anybody knows about GPS. You know, it's using Einstein's general theory of relativity, special theory of relativity, making all these calculations.
Yeah.
And we get hammered on the grass basket.
Yeah. Yeah.
So it's, I think, go back to what we were saying earlier, you get the most innocuous things that are very simple. We say we need a grass basket or we've got grain problems, but they're very tangential. You end up having to solve lots of different other things to cure them. So,
yeah.
So I think we'll crawl, walk, run.
Right.
For us, our business model is, right now we're based in Germany, and we would like to try and get maybe 10% of the market. There's 700 clubs in Germany, so if we got 70 clubs on board over the next three years, that suits our business model. We've already had people phoning from Ireland saying, can you come to Ireland, which would kind of suit. It was a club just outside of Dublin. And I could fly directly out of Nuremberg to Dublin with the Ryanair for pence. So yeah, that would theoretically work. There's been lots of interest in the UK for it. I've done two seminars here, drones and greenkeeping, because there is more than one application. Yes, you can use it for what we'd use it for, but there's other applications for it. Obviously, the video blogging is what everyone would recognise, but there's also digitally measuring the course. You can fly the entire course, measure every surface, and it's very quick. So if you do a renovation, you can very quickly get new numbers for what you're using. So there are other applications for it, and so I reckon we could hit that number. You know, it's not unrealistic. And once we've done our proof of concept this year and we can actually show that we're saving people money, that's when people will start jumping on the bandwagon, I think, because they'll say, well, if they're saving money, and obviously we're looking for a key player, if we can get a big club involved who really buy into it, then it's a domino effect. Yeah, especially in football, if we can get the Bundesliga, and we've had a couple of interested Bundesliga clubs, if we can get 22 Bundesliga clubs, that's just halfway to our goal this year.
Sure.
And for them, the main benefit is there is a system that can do stadiums. It's a fixed camera that can do the stadium. But what people don't realise is most football teams have 9 practice fields. And you can't do that with a fixed camera, whereas we work with one football team at the moment, and I can fly their 9 practice fields in about 8 minutes. And deliver information and the thing is, what they don't realise, the practice field has to be the same quality as the stadium. That's what the players need. There's no point in practicing on sub quality when they're going to be playing football at the weekend in the stadium. So we can help them with that. And for football, we can definitely save them money. One of our teams that we work with at the moment, the greenkeeper is very keen on it. He's a PlayStation kid, and he's been using it properly. He's been flying the field, looking to see where he needs to put his fertilizer. Another benefit is they only have one lighting rig in the stadium. And before, they would just move it around and do the whole thing, and it would cost a lot of electricity. But he can actually see, well, I don't need it in this corner, I don't need it there. So he can save himself time with that job, and he can save electricity, because it's a vast amount of money for him. So it's money saving. Yeah, that's the big key thing for most golf clubs and football teams, is they want to save money, and we can help them to do that.
Well, how do people find you? Do you have a website?
We have a website. It's called graskosmart.com. At the moment, it's only in Germany. I've already had one person email me, can you switch this to English? And I sort of spoke to my GM and said, can we change this to English? I said, that's really complicated. Why don't you just write back to him in English and tell him what the product is? But we may end up with an English version. But yeah, graskosmart.com.
Okay.
You can see what we've been doing this past year and a half almost. I've only been on the project 9 months, but we have an agricultural engineer started it, and he was like 6-8 months before I got there. So the two of us work together now. So it's been my job to make the drone do what it needs to do. It's been his job to help the programmers get the functionality of the program working. So that's kind of where we're at.
Great. And John, do you guys have a website where everybody can reach you?
We do. You can go to all the W's, cupcadetturf.com.
Okay. Excellent. Guys, thank you for your time.
You're welcome.
Really interesting
thank
stuff.
You very
Keep
much.
It up. Definitely love to
thank
see
you.
Where this goes. Thanks.
Good man. Thank you.
The Green Room Golf Course podcast is produced by myself, Carl Hansel, on behalf of the British and International Golf Greenkeepers Association. For questions, comments and concerns, you can get in touch with me by emailing carl@bigger.co.uk. That's Carl with a K. You can also join the conversation on social media using @greenroombigger. And we've also got a Facebook page where all the latest notices, news releases and information from Bigger can be found. We're also on Instagram using @bigger_HQ. Subscribe and leave us a review on Apple Podcasts. The more people know about the sports turf industry, the more understanding they will have about the hard work of Bigger members and other greenkeepers. And speaking of Bigger membership, if you're inspired by what you hear to progress your career in greenkeeping, then a major first step is signing up to the association. The opportunities for career development are countless and potentially life-changing, such as volunteer opportunities at major tournaments and educational opportunities across Europe and the USA. Don't forget, if you're a golfer and you've got any questions about anything you hear on the podcast, have a conversation with the greenkeepers at your club. They've got the expertise to explain what's happening at the course and how it fits into the team's long-term vision to improve playability and enjoyment of the facility.